Who will pay? Having a global roadmap for action is the critical first step. The next step is figuring out who will pay for the plan. The issue is especially important when considering the developing countries. Soon the developing world, with roughly 5/6 of the world's population, will be emitting more carbon dioxide in total than the industrialized world, though still much less on a per capita basis. The world cannot reach a viable solution on reducing carbon emissions without including the developing countries. Yet because of their limited resources, the developing nations cannot afford to pay for mitigation, adaptation, and RD&D on their own. They will necessarily require support from the developed countries, which will remain the much larger emitters of greenhouse gases per person. There are many reasons why the developed countries should help finance the developing countries' efforts to limit and adapt to climate change. First, it is in their best interest to do so. A solution that excludes the developing world would be no solution at all. If the developed countries wish to protect themselves from the negative effects of climate change, they had better help the developing countries protect themselves as well. Second, the developed countries are responsible for the preponderance of global carbon dioxide emissions since the start of the industrial era. Most important, however, cost must not be used as an excuse to postpone action. The longer we wait, the more expensive and dire the problem will end up being. The issue of cost sharing will be highly charged and could cause negotiations to drag on for years. But the costs should not be exaggerated, nor should we wait for a perfect standard of fairness and efficiency, since no such standard exists. It would be one thing if the costs are huge, say several percent of GNP in high-emitting countries. But the good news, emphasized earlier, is that the global costs of keeping carbon dioxide concentrations below a long-term doubling of pre-industrial CO2, or even much less, are likely to be considerably below 1% of the world's annual income. Yes, there will be a fight over allocating costs, but it need not be a huge battle. Lessons from ozone depletion. Although the prospect of reaching a global agreement on such a complex issue, which involves a resource, the atmosphere, shared by every nation on the planet, and strikes the very core of our global economic system, is daunting, it is not impossible. Climate change is certainly a solvable problem. Indeed, we have addressed a similar, if far more focused, challenge in the past, with tremendous success. The progress to control the depletion of stratospheric ozone provides important lessons for us now. In the mid-1970s, three brilliant atmospheric scientists, Paul Crutzen, originator of the concept of the Anthropocene, Sherwood Rowling, and Mario Molina, published a series of papers putting forward the idea that a class of chemicals known as chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, were endangering humanity through their effects on stratospheric ozone. When the CFCs were carried by air circulation into the upper atmosphere, the ultraviolet radiation of the sun dissociated the chlorine atoms from the CFC molecules, and the chlorine atoms then attacked the ozone. Since ozone protects us from ultraviolet radiation by absorbing the incoming solar UV rays, the depletion of the stratospheric ozone layer posed a grave health hazard to humanity, as well as a danger to crops and marine phytoplankton. After the first studies of ozone depletion by Crutzen, Rowling, and Molina, scientists began to debate the new and still controversial findings about CFCs. The first reaction from businesses that relied heavily on CFCs was to attack the new findings. The chairman of DuPont, the world's leading maker of CFCs for refrigeration and aerosol sprays, famously described the theory as a science fiction tale, a load of rubbish, utter nonsense. Very soon afterwards, though, further scientific research confirmed the initial findings, and a scientific consensus emerged. The public rallied behind the issue, galvanized in particular by the shocking picture taken in space by a NASA satellite in 1985 of the visibly gaping hole in the ozone layer above Antarctica. It is important that a safe alternative to CFCs was developed and adopted by industry leaders, which made the prospect of abandoning the harmful chemicals more palatable to industry. Finally, the world adopted a global framework for action under the auspices of the United Nations. In 1985, the world took its first steps in the Vienna Convention on the Protection of the Ozone Layer, a framework convention analogous to the UNFCCC. By 1987, the first operational steps were taken in the Montreal Protocol, analogous to the Kyoto Protocol on climate change. The Montreal Protocol began phasing out the use of CFCs in industrialized countries, while giving poorer countries extra time to phase them out as well. When DuPont realized that it could eliminate CFCs through the use of other chemical compounds, it signaled the U.S. government to support even tighter standards, and these tighter standards were adopted in the 1990 London amendments to the Montreal Protocol. The world quickly, indeed almost painlessly, eliminated a major man-made threat. Solving the climate change problem will demand the same four steps: scientific consensus, public awareness, the development of alternative technologies, and a global framework of action. We have come far in each area. The scientific consensus is strong. The public awareness has risen dramatically because of the onset of actual climate change, not merely its prediction for the future. New and exciting low-emission technologies are in the R&D stage, though not yet in widespread use. Finally, there is a global framework, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, a first step in the Kyoto Protocol, and a growing determination to move forward to much stronger implementation. If the Vienna Convention is like the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and the Montreal Protocol is analogous to the Kyoto Protocol, we now need a post-Kyoto global agreement, the climate version of the London Amendments to the Montreal Agreement. Unlike the very limited and flawed Kyoto Protocol, a successful international agreement on climate change will have to recognize the increasingly important role of the developing world, both as contributors to the problem and as leaders in solving it.